Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today for University Matters on Campus FM, Dr. Anna Kaki. Just a few words about my guest. She obtained her first degree from the University of Lund in Sweden, where she majored in political science. She went on to study for an MA and a PhD in political science and international relations at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva, Switzerland. Before joining the Department of International Relations at the University of Malta, she worked as a senior researcher at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies and for several years as a consultant to think tanks and international organizations, including the Norwegian Peace Building Center, FRIDE, Euromesco, the Policy Practice, Geneva Center for the Democratic Control of Armed Forces, and the United Nations Development Programme. Her research interests include democratization, democracy promotion, and development issues. Her previous work experience has also focused extensively on human security. Welcome to the program, Dr. Kaki.
Thank you very much.
And obviously from that bio, one can imagine that we're going to be talking about humanitarian issues, and in particular, the master's course, which you have developed recently. I think the first cohort was last year.
This is the third time that we're running the MA, so the third cohort started 2 months ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. Perhaps we can start off with a general question about the raison d'etre for this course. Why did you and your colleagues create this course? Why did you feel it was necessary? What's behind it?
There were several reasons. I should say, first of all, that it was something that was thought about and discussed prior to me joining the university. So the former head of department, Dr. Isabel Kaleya, was very active in this. And I think the department and the university and the thinking behind it was both from the perspective of Malta, there's nothing like it in the Maltese context and in the wider Mediterranean context. So that was something that they had looked at and saying, wow, there's a need at the Mediterranean level for an English language MA in humanitarian action. Second, Malta has a long tradition going back all the way to the Knights of humanitarian action, however one wants to define that. So there has been a lot of activities going on in Malta, so it was nice to be able to develop on that and tap into that. Moreover, at the European level, ECHO, which is part of the European Commission, has been demanding, asking for more professional education in humanitarian action. So there were several reasons why this MA was set up.
One can imagine that, yes, there was this need for an academic background to those who are going to go out in the field, not only in the field. I'm sure there are sort of policymakers as well will come out of your course, but many of those people will go out into the field. So what was needed was this very good, solid background behind what they do so that they can do it better, I presume.
Exactly. And this course is both academic and more practically oriented. So we have a variety of lectures, I'm sure we'll go into that later on, giving both more hands-on experiences from their work in the field, in humanitarian action around the globe, and combining that with that very important academic or analytical, critical background, that what have been the consequences of humanitarian action in various contexts, and why has it worked in some contexts? Why has it gone sometimes awfully wrong, such as happened in, for example, Rwanda, and try to learn from those experiences and go out, as you just said, better prepared and better ready to provide good services.
perhaps we can go through the academic program. I know that sounds a bit boring, perhaps, but looking at the academic program, of course, it isn't boring at all, because each one of the points that are made, each one of the units that you go into in this course, is so topical and so interesting in itself. Perhaps we can sort of take them a little bit one by one. Obviously, you have an introduction to humanitarian action to start off with, and then you have this legal framework for humanitarian action, an introduction to humanitarian law and diplomacy. So what do you do in that particular unit?
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's a good question. It's not a boring question to my mind, at least, because this is where we put the most of our work, and we try to think about how to make the students into confident actors wherever they would want to work, be it in sort of more policy areas or hands on the ground. So what kinds of skills and what kinds of knowledge would they need to be able to do so? So that's how we thought when we developed the program. So for example, in my course, which introduces humanitarian action, we're trying to look at the past and how did this agenda emerge? Where did it come from? Was it a Western-driven agenda, or does it have a past elsewhere as well? We also try to look at previous cases and learn from them. Then the legal framework, which you mentioned, is meant to give students a background into international humanitarian law, the Geneva Conventions, and a number of different kinds of norms that exist on humanitarian action, because obviously they will have to be aware of them and follow them when they go into the field or when they decide on how to react to a humanitarian calamity.
Yes, because they can't just walk in, and they have to work within this quite a distinct framework of legality. So,
and it's interesting because this is international law, and I think I don't want to sort of put words in the mouth of the lecturer, which is Dr. Shabazz Trigona, but I think that what he does is he says, okay, international law has nobody to really enforce it. And so basically international law, and that's why he uses diplomacy as well, is a tool as well in diplomacy, for example, to gain access. Because when there has been a humanitarian calamity, it's not always that the government is very willing to give access. We had the case of Myanmar in 2008. There was a major humanitarian catastrophe, and the government did not want to grant access to anybody. So people were dying and not receiving any help. So then it's about also being able to use international humanitarian law to say, look, you have obligations, and try to negotiate access using also those kinds of legal tools.
Yes, I suppose negotiation must be a theme that goes throughout all the units that you actually teach, I suppose.
Yes, there are many themes that sort of will have to run through the entire course, and that's one of the challenges and also one of the things that make it interesting.
And you have governance and policy making the international context. How does that fit in?
That's a course that gives a more political background into sort of the institutional framework of international organizations and international politics, international security, because obviously there are two types of humanitarian calamities, man-made and natural. The natural can be extremely devastating, as we have seen in Haiti or in Turkey or Algeria further back, or Iran. There are a number of cases. Some of them remain politically quite simple. When we talk about man-made calamities or calamities that become very complex, such as the Haiti one, which later on became a very politically complicated story, but the man-made ones are made out of man's war, folly, greed, etc. And there you have to understand the different players, the governments, the militias, the international organizations. So that study unit gives a background into that.
And the practical aspects, what do you mean by practical aspects of humanitarian action?
That one we recently renamed management in humanitarian action, because that better captured it. Although practical aspect was also, it's a little bit saying the same thing in two different ways, but it's really about trying to give the students that kind of hands-on understanding of how do we fundraise if they're working for a non-governmental organization? How do we budget? How do we manage resources? How do we manage a project from the start to the end? It's called project cycle management. How do we report back to donors? How do we, so it's all that kinds of practical aspects around a project. It's also got to do with things like security in the field. How do we make sure that when we go in there that our staff, both the staff that are employed on the spot, locally employed they're called, and the people that are deployed from abroad, that they are secure? How do we manage procurement issues? So it's all these kinds of practical issues around a deployment into the field in a humanitarian calamity.
You mentioned NGOs or voluntary organizations. Of course, there are many different entities that provide these humanitarian services, shall we call them that, which it could be, I don't know, it could be the United Nations itself, it could be a small NGO. I mean, there's a vast gamut of people out there doing humanitarian action. It seems quite complicated.
It is. It's very, very complicated. And that's another very important issue in management, and it's coordination between humanitarian agencies, NGOs, government, because we also have bilateral donors involved in this. So USAID, for example, is a big donor of humanitarian aid, the European Commission, various European governments are involved. So it's very, very complex. And that's one of the main criticisms against humanitarian action, that there's a lot of duplication, there's a lot of waste, because there's not enough coordination, there's not enough cooperation between the different organizations that are involved on the ground. And Haiti was a good example of that, for example.
Why do you think there is this lack of coordination? One can imagine that there is a difficulty when you've got a small NGO who's very keen to do something, and then you've got the United Nations entity. How could that coordination happen? Even if there was the best will in the world, actually, I would imagine getting those two entities together would be very difficult.
Yes, it is very difficult, and it brings us back to what I mentioned a little moment ago when we talked about international law. There's no one to say, okay, I'm going to decide this. The UN doesn't have that kind of authority and that kind of status to be able to say, okay, we're going to take the lead role and we're going to tell people you're going to go into that area and provide these kinds of services or whatever. So what we have is always voluntary. So far, often what happens is that it's OCHA, which is the UN agency that is responsible for the coordination of humanitarian relief, that will take the lead on the ground with various very large NGOs such as Oxfam or the ICRC, which is the International Committee of the Red Cross, or another of the major, say the children, that will take the lead in one of the particular areas, say sanitation or food or medicine, where Médecins Sans Frontières is often the lead agency. So there are attempts at coordination, but literally there can be tens of thousands of NGOs in one particular emergency situation. And it becomes massive. And we have the national NGOs, we have the international NGOs, and sometimes what happens is that the national NGOs, which are the ones that know the situation the best, are sometimes ignored because...
Sidelined. But I suppose also, as a sort of added complication, you've got some NGOs, because we're talking about humanitarian action in a very sort of wide sense, mm-hmm. but of course it's very obvious what Médecins Sans Frontières do, but perhaps it's less obvious what other NGOs specialise in, because you do get some NGOs that would specialise in sort of nutrition and others. Obviously Save the Children would, but getting to know which NGOs do what, I suppose, is also a challenge.
Yes, and there are also many NGOs that start working in humanitarian action after a particular event in their region. So, for example, I'm using the Haiti example a lot, but there were a lot of Haitians living in the US that just set up these NGOs because of the pictures that they saw on TV. We saw that in Malta as well after what happened in Libya and the Libya crisis. There were NGOs that sprang up, and they don't have a prior mandate, if you will, and not a clear sense of, we're going to go into this. They're going into it with a lot of enthusiasm, and to fit them into the system is also a challenge then, obviously.
You need to send somebody to do your course so that
Exactly.
And humanitarian evaluation, theory and practice. Yeah, I don't know whether you've changed the title lately.
No, I may have got the
same one. I suppose they learn to look at the different entities and try to sort of to understand what's going on.
Yes, this is a course that I'm teaching, and I enjoy teaching it a lot, because what we've seen is that sometimes people go into this wanting to do a lot of good, but wanting to do good doesn't, we know this from all areas of life, doesn't mean that we actually end up doing good. So it's very important to go back and see what happened. Did we achieve our objectives? Did we save lives in the way that we had intended? Were there unintended consequences of the aid that we were giving? So that's what evaluation is about. And humanitarian evaluation obviously poses particular challenges, because these are very complex and very dangerous and difficult environments, both to working in the first place and also to do evaluations in. So that's what we're discussing in a very, very brief.
You mentioned danger. You also have a unit in security. Yes, at the moment, obviously, this is an extremely topical issue when it comes to people going out and helping. And you study the security and ethics in humanitarian action. That's an interesting point.
That's a guest professor from Spain who's coming in to do that course. And he has worked a lot in Latin America and also particularly in Myanmar. And he comes in and talks about specifically ethical issues and security issues in aid giving. So he talks about, how do we give aid in an ethical way? Is it ethical to give money, for example, directly in a humanitarian calamity or not, and why not? So he's discussing a lot of kind of issues around how we give and what kind of consequences that has.
I'm interested in the media and humanitarian action. Coming from a PR background, I think the media play a huge part in the way things are reported, and I think the humanitarian action people who are actually doing the action themselves obviously do need to have a very, very good idea of how the media can affect a situation.
Yes, it's that's taught by Dr. Samut, who is our new head of department, and it's a fascinating area, really fascinating. And the media has been blamed for how it reports on humanitarian calamities and how it portrays humanitarian calamities. And humanitarian workers can be exasperated sometimes vis-a-vis the media, saying, 9 tenths out of time we're treated like we were angels, not as if we were human beings, but really angels. And then 1/10 of the time we become the devil itself. So there's no nuanced reporting. And even from the humanitarian calamities, you want this kind of reporting where you have the good and the bad, and you have the victims and you have the perpetrators, and you create these kind of dichotomies which don't necessarily give room for the complexities on the ground. And they're fascinating cases after the genocide in Rwanda, for example, where the media coverage has gone awfully wrong. This course actually looks also at the practical aspects around creating a media strategy if you're working for an NGO and trying to work with the media. So it has a sort of dual perspective in that respect.
The students that take your course, what kind of career prospects do they have? Obviously, if they take the course, they want to be in the area of humanitarian action. But of course, as we said before, there's a sort of wide area. From one end would be the policymakers, and the other ones would be very much the people on the ground. What are the careers, really, that are possible when you've got this kind of educational background?
Yes, there are, as you mentioned, a wide spectrum of possibilities. So either you can go into working for government, and I know that the Maltese government wishes to become more implicated in humanitarian action, and it's been sort of in the cards for a few years. You can go and work for the EU institutions. The EU is the largest donor of development aid and a very large donor of humanitarian aid specifically. There's also obviously the UN agencies that are very, very much involved, and there are a number of those, from the UNHCR, which is the refugee commissioner, to the UNDP, the development program, OCHA, as I mentioned earlier. So those are possibilities. Then we have working for NGOs on the ground, and there are a lot of those, both religious NGOs or associations and private ones. There are very large ones and small ones. There are those that are based in Malta that are based abroad. So there's really a wide spectrum of possibilities.
I've done some work with local NGOs, and now the concept of an NGO has changed really over the last years. They are much more structured than they were, even locally, I mean. Mm-hmm. They've been structured for a long time elsewhere, but here in Malta there are NGOs that actually employ people to do various things or to be in EU projects, humanitarian projects, and there are obviously the NGO by its nature is the board is not paid, but it doesn't mean to say they cannot pay employees. So even locally, people could get jobs with NGOs that actually do pay a salary.
Yes, there are those possibilities. And that's something that I think is going to develop further in the years to come as the Maltese tap more into the EU collaborative frameworks in this respect. So I think it's going to be developed more. But obviously we're also targeting all those that are working on the side, if you will, in humanitarian action, because you can actually also take individual study units from the MA and as a kind of professional upgrading. So if you're particularly keen on, say, the ethic ones, applied ethics in humanitarian action, then you can take that as a standalone study unit, the one with Dr. Trigona as well on law and diplomacy in humanitarian action is possible to take on its own. So that's also a way to capture a wider audience, not only those that, as you mentioned, will go into this professionally, but also those that work on this as you did, or probably still do, on the side, so to speak.
That's an interesting point to make. So this program is offered also to people outside, outside the course itself. Mm-hmm. Now that you have graduates, what has their experience been? I'm sure they've come back to you and really told you about their experiences. Where have they gone?
Well, we have our graduates will be graduates next week, so I'll be really eager to see them there in the Jesuit church in Valletta when they graduate. It's going to be a big moment for them, but also for us. I know that a couple of them have started already before they graduated. They got jobs at REFCOM, so they're working here in Malta. Several of them also have been working for Maltese NGOs and doing internships with Maltese NGOs and with the Red Cross. We have our second cohort that are now doing their internships and are writing their dissertations. One of them just talked to yesterday, or the day before yesterday, just came back from the Philippines where she had been doing an internship with a smaller NGO locally based in the Philippines. We have someone who is at the European Asylum Office doing an internship there. We're sort of eagerly seeing where they are all going to be placed. We also have some that are actually already working in the field and are coming to upgrade their skills with us, which is also something which I'm very pleased about.
Before we give details about how people can get more information, I'd like to have your idea, as somebody who's worked in the area, who's an academic in the area, your idea of humanitarian action with some examples you've already given, perhaps some where there are different types of humanitarian action that hasn't helped. What are the good and the possibly negative sides to humanitarian action?
Well, that's a very big and very difficult question. We have some emblematic cases that have become cases that have changed a lot in the way that humanitarian action is perceived. I mentioned Rwanda. That is such a case where little was done during the genocide, and after the genocide there was a huge sense of guilt, and people rushed to the camps that were formed on the borders of Rwanda where people had fled. What the media didn't really report correctly was that there were the ones that fled were the Hutus, and some of them were responsible for the genocide on the Tutsis. And the international community failed to separate those that were genocidaires, as they were called, that had committed the genocide and that were part of the armed forces or part of these militia groups that had been responsible for the slaughter, from the genuine Hutu refugees who feared for their lives in retribution killings. And this situation went on for 2 years. So it wasn't just in the for a short while in the sort of frenzy of, you know,
confusion of the moment.
Exactly. So that was a very, very big wake-up call for the international community, and there were a lot of things in the system that changed after Rwanda. So that was a negative experience.
But perhaps that made those working in the area aware of that particular problem.
Exactly. No, it led to a lot of changes that have been legal changes, changes in norms at the international level, changes in collaboration between different agencies, new kinds of evaluation became a much larger issue after Rwanda, for example. After Rwanda, the first really large evaluation was commissioned on the response. You wanted to ask also about the positive examples. Yes. Obviously, people tend to look more at the negative ones. The tsunami was an example where there was a lot done. There were enough resources given by the international community to try to cope with this. There were issues. Obviously, there are always issues when it's such a huge response. But there were a lot of things that were done much better than, say, in Rwanda.
Well, unfortunately, we're coming towards the end of the program. Perhaps we could tell people about the details about admissions. Obviously, there's an admissions process which they can get into from the website. But if they want to have further information, I presume you have a website. Perhaps you could tell us about that.
First of all, I would want to say that we're very much encouraging people from various backgrounds to apply, because this is not something to do with international relations or political science or law only. As you mentioned, when you picked and chose some of the study units, it's a very broad spectrum, and we have medicine and public health, for example, as well as another study unit. We have issues looking into forced migration, there's sort of people coming from a variety of areas. So we're looking at people who have an interest in going to the working on the ground, from a medical background, from a security background, from a background of the armed forces, or from other kinds of media backgrounds, etc. So that's the first thing I wanted to underline. And then we have a website where there's more information. They're always welcome. Anyone who's interested is very welcome to contact me directly via email.
Obviously, Dr. Anna Kakir is a senior lecturer within the Department of International Relations. So on the International Relations site, they'll find information about the course. I'd like to thank you very much, Dr. Kakir, for coming on University Matters to talk about this very interesting Masters in Humanitarian Action. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.